Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
OC Panel tackles 2020 in the rear view. Taking 2020 in segments, a panel of educators, experts, and citizens participated in a coffee and community conversation called 2020 in the Rear View. Moderator Jonathan Fuentes, Odessa College Executive Dean of Academic Partnerships and a political scientist by training, used a Los Angeles Times timeline published in December 2020 for reference. Along with Fuentes, participants were Christine Flickinger, Program Director for the Surgical Technology Program and Associate Professor of Surgical Technology, Naomi Chapman, Social Studies Instructor, Eden Simmons, Licensed Professional Counselor, Blair Roberts, Senior Research Economist, Nikki Brown, OC Law Enforcement Academy Coordinator. Fuentes said COVID-19 has killed nearly 400,000 people so far. He noted that the flu has killed 12,000 to 61,000 American citizens a year in the last 10 years. Flickinger said the vaccine will help us get to herd immunity, but 80 to 90% of the population would have to take it. It's going to take us a long time to roll that out, and when we're talking about getting people out back into society, back shopping, it still is going to require social distancing and mask wearing, because it's not about the people who have had the vaccine. It's going to be about the people who have not had the vaccine. There are still going to be people out there who can spread the virus. And washing your hands, it's still going to be there in the forefront to get us back into society, Flickinger said. Before the pandemic, Roberts said there was a movement toward more people working online and working at home. This virus has just accelerated that. When we get over the virus, not everybody's going to stay home and work, Roberts said. There are going to be many more people who are. Restaurants and stores and colleges going through this are going to have plans in place and be much more able to deal with something like this in the future. Simmons said people are experiencing a looming sense of uncertainty, and students have been impacted by that. If they are working a part-time job, which a lot of our students are, and as we know, part-time workers are usually the first to have hours cut or to be laid off, I've seen a lot of that in our students, and also just kind of this looming feeling of uncertainty, and that they're going to school and investing time and money into these degrees, and they want to be able to graduate and enter the workforce and have jobs available. So I think it's been really difficult for them to tolerate that uncertainty and anxiety and continue to move forward in purposeful action toward their goals, Simmons said. Social sciences instructor Naomi Chapman said some of her students are struggling and some are thriving online. We're just seeing more people reaching out for extra help or time or saying go through this or that with my family with illness, job loss, or being unsure in that situation. I think they feel more open to tell me about that because they know that other people have that going on too. It's caused me to also learn new ways of working with people through that situation. Fuentes noted that there has been an infusion of federal money that has helped students stay in college. He said his message to students is to take advantage of those funds. We get that the economy is impacting you and your ability to be here, but the federal government is helping to make it possible. Odessa College is also making it possible through Odessa through additional scholarship funds. So we are leveraging all our resources to help you be successful and stay in school, Fuentes said. He said the death of George Floyd at the hands of police in Minneapolis, Minnesota, was one of the incidents in 2020 that led to civil unrest. You couldn't watch that video and not be impacted. It hit hard, and it hit a humanitarian tone within us where something is clearly wrong, Fuentes said. When you hear somebody calling out for their mother, as a parent, how can I not react to that? It hit a chord in America, and I saw many respond to it through social media. people wanted to talk about it. And it's a conversation that needs to be had in the United States. He added that in government class, they talk about civil rights, and people think it was back in the 50s and 60s, but it continues on. We're not exactly where we need to be, Fuentes said. America is still a work in progress, and we still have work to do. Simmons said from a mental health perspective, thinking about the images people viewed, you think you have to first have a first-hand experience with something to be traumatized or to experience symptoms of PTSD, but there is something known as secondhand trauma. So I think for a lot of people, seeing those images and just everything going on was traumatic. We saw a lot of the symptoms that you would see in somebody who's a first responder and has seen things firsthand, and then also kind of re-traumatization. So individuals who may have experienced those types of things firsthand, seeing those images kind of reignites that trauma that maybe they had healed from previously. So I think trauma is a big component in that conversation, Simmons said. Brown noted that civil unrest normally doesn't stem from just one issue. There are normally other socioeconomic issues that take place in the same time frame or time span that now it's come to a head, Brown said. There have been conversations and commissions on criminal justice reform and law enforcement and understanding law enforcement corruption. From a law enforcement perspective, Brown said some departments started changing their use of force policies with chokeholds, reevaluating what that looks like, looking at the force continuum. How was that evaluated, where it may be changed? The accountability piece, looking at implicit bias, de-escalation. If an officer sees another officer using excessive force, is it their duty to stop it or report it?
Odessa American Opinion Page, Friday, January 22nd. Texas View: How the Legislature Can Help Children Falling Behind in School. The Point: Lawmakers Need to Act Boldly to Make Up for Learning Gaps Due to COVID-19. Texas Comptroller Glenn Hegar delivered good budget news last week as lawmakers began their session. The expected budget shortfall isn't quite as big as feared. There will still be belt tightening, though, so forgive school superintendents who have seen their state funding yo-yo over the years if they appear jittery until the final gavel bangs in May. The challenge is that in 2019, when the coffers were packed after years of a strong economy, the state assumed a greater share of overall education funding in hopes of curtailing growth of local property taxes. Lawmakers simply can't lurch in the other direction. Districts will need steady budgets, at a minimum, to overcome the lingering challenge of the coronavirus pandemic and its impact on learning across two different academic years. The state's last massive budget shortfall in 2011 brought the first education funding cuts in modern memory. The impact was felt for years. It can't happen again. Lost learning. Funding remains the top issue, but it's far from the only education matter lawmakers must tackle. In this session, lawmakers must assess how bad the isolation of the pandemic has been for students, especially those most at risk of lost learning, and support solutions to fix it. It's not a matter of whether students have fallen behind in the era of distance learning. It's how much, and there are ample signs it's bad. In Fort Worth, the number of students failing at least one class this school year has skyrocketed, Star Telegram reporter Silas Allen found. In Dallas, half of students have slipped in math and a third in reading. Distance learning was necessary as the pandemic erupted, but the trade-off has been costly. Lawmakers must help districts make up the gaps. They should take a reparative approach, not a punitive one. First, we need to know exactly how bad the problem is. That means testing. Texas has had a sea change over student testing in recent years, after decades of ever-increasing stakes for test results. Parents and teachers revolted against teaching to the test, for good reasons. But you can't fix a problem you can't measure, so now is not the time to further scale back testing. Schools need tools to find out exactly where individual students are. At the same time, they shouldn't have to fear negative consequences from the state based on these important test results. The Texas Education Agency's steps on this have been good so far, as letter grades for schools are suspended. Lawmakers shouldn't change direction. The best way to assess students, and of course make up for learning gaps, is to get children back into schools. The legislature should support every reasonable idea that will make that happen. The spread of the virus in schools among children isn't the problem. It's the risk posed to teachers and other workers, and staff stretched thin as those potentially exposed to the virus must quarantine. We've said that when it comes to the vaccine, it's a mistake to put healthy teachers ahead of vulnerable Texans. But as the supply increases, the state could get creative in working with districts to get employees inoculated. Help for schools. The state must also help schools adapt to the pandemic more quickly. A capital program that would fund improvements in ventilation would help lessen the risk in crowded buildings. And schools may need help enticing retirees to come back to work once the pandemic wanes. It's time to get creative, too, on making up for lost time. Teachers have reported that some students have disappeared entirely since campuses shut down or are rarely seen. Enhanced truancy enforcement may be in order. And to catch up on lessons, schools might need extended calendars, perhaps even a period of year-round learning. And as bad as online learning has been in many places, some distance education will continue to make sense. The state should investigate what's worked best and help districts implement it. In some cases, the biggest concern is reliable broadband access, something state policy can help address. Districts need steady funding from the state, but they also require flexibility and accountability to close the gaps for a generation of students, especially the needy. Lawmakers need to list and then act boldly on behalf of all Texas students. Opinion column by the Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
Obituaries for Friday, January 22nd. Thomas Dale Stedham. Mentone. Thomas Dale Stedham, 86, passed away January 16th in Odessa. He was born in Haskell County, February 18, 1934, to O.C. Lee and Sammy Cox Stedham. He married Geraldine Both in 1976 in Odessa, and they shared 34 years together until she passed in 2011. Tom is survived by his sons, Charlie Stedham and wife Crystal of Monahans, Kevin Kahn and wife Edna of Odessa, Joe Kahn of Odessa, daughters Jill Stedham Simonson and husband Steve of Mentone, and Ange Stedham Rodriguez of Felipe Correa, Puerto Mexico. Sisters Mary Bell Jones of Mentone and Moselle Barty of Albany. 12 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents, O.C. and Sammy Stedham, son Neil Stedham, wife Geraldine Stedham, brother-in-laws Gordon Cooter Barty and Elgin Punk Jones, and a nephew and niece. Graveside services will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, January 23rd at the P&M Jones Family Cemetery, with Brother Joe Carrasco officiating. Arrangements are entrusted to a Family Services Funeral Parlor, and condolences may be sent to the family online at www.fsfp.com. Arville Clyde Bud Bush. Pecos. Arville Bud Clyde Bush, 85, of Odessa, passed away Sunday, January 17th. He was born August 16th, 1935, in Odessa, to the late Clyde Emery Bush and Mabel May Foster. Surviving him are his wife, Frances Bush, 5 daughters, Angie Bush, Charlene Weaver, Angela Harrison and husband Roger, Tina Youngblood, and Linda Simmons and husband Robbie, as well as 10 grandchildren, 15 great-grandchildren, one great-great-granddaughter, an uncle, and numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins. He was preceded in death by his parents and six aunts, uncles, and numerous cousins. In lieu of flowers, please donate to your favorite charity. Visitation will be held Sunday, January 24th at 1 p.m., and the family will receive friends from 5 to 9 p.m. at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Monday, January 25th at Acres West Funeral Chapel, officiated by Pastor John Villatoro. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death notices. Jimmy Dale Ash. Jimmy Dale Ash, 81, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January 20th. A graveside service will be held at 3 p.m. Friday, January 22nd at Sunset Memorial Gardens, with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Marilyn K. Price Parker. Marilyn K. Parker, 68, of Odessa, died Friday, January 15th. A funeral service was held January 22nd at Crossroads Fellowship Chapel. Burial followed immediately at American Heritage Cemetery, with David Newton officiating. Michelle Rodriguez. Andrews. Michelle Rodriguez, 51, of Odessa, died Saturday, January 16th in Andrews. A funeral service will be held at 3 p.m. Wednesday, January 27th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Reverend William Bill Tatum. Reverend William Bill Tatum, 91, of Odessa, died Friday, January 8th. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 23rd at Rose of Sharon Missionary Baptist Church, with Reverend W. L. Archie officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Odie Clay Tallman. Odie Clay Tallman, 55, of Lake Hills, died Friday, January 15th in San Antonio. A graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. January 25th at Sunset Memorial Gardens, with the Reverend Jan Reed officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
This is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, January 16th, 2021. Weekend edition. Setting the rules for how the legislative game will be played. Today, some legislative math and how factions battled over fractions. The equation involves how two-thirds became three-fifths en route to becoming five-ninths. And more important than how is why. It has to do with something no less important than total control over the flow of legislation to the Texas Senate floor. First, a refresher on a fact of Texas legislative life. In the 31-member Senate, what's called the regular order of business never is the regular order of business. The actual regular order of business involves suspending the alleged regular order of business via a motion to suspend the regular order of business. This is how bills forwarded by committees get to the full Senate. Not a bad concept. Among other things, it can avoid wasting time on bills with no chance of approval. In simpler times, it also has guaranteed a modicum of minority party input. For many years, including many when Democrats ruled the Senate and pretty much all of state government, it took 21 votes, two-thirds of the senators, to bring a bill to the floor. But in 2015, GOP Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who can count, pushed through a change that replaced the two-thirds rule with a three-fifths rule, which meant 19 of 31 votes to get a bill to the floor. The Repubs had 20 senators that year, one less than two-thirds, which meant the change to three-fifths allowed bills to get to the floor without the support of a single Democratic senator. And all was well in the Senate, if you were a Republican in the 2015, 2017, and 2019 sessions. Sessions are only in odd-numbered years. But there was disruption in the Senate universe in 2020 when the Democrats picked up a seat and the GOP was down to 18 senators, one short of the 19 needed to move bills to the floor. What's a Republican to do? Math, that's what. And that's what Patrick did. And that's why the Texas Senate, in an 18-13 party line vote on Wednesday, scrapped the 3/5 rule in favor of the 5/9 rule. That means this year it'll take 18 votes to move measures to the floor. Patrick, to his credit, is candid about the motivation for the change, math and politics. The Republicans changed it because they could, and that's your daily reminder that winning elections matters. Prior to the Wednesday vote, in a speech to the GOP-friendly Texas Public Policy Foundation, Patrick said the state benefits from stripping Democrats of any say in legislative flow in the Senate. Texas, he said, is a GOP state. That's why, in the last three sessions, we had three of the most conservative sessions in the history of any state anywhere, he said of the succession of rule changes that have continued the Repub's total control of Senate bill flow. The 5/9 rule was advocated during Wednesday's floor debate by Senator Brian Hughes, R. Mineola, who sponsored the rules proposal and, though acknowledging the partisan nature of it, tried to offer some other good reasons for a 5/9 rule. Senator John Whitmire, D. Houston, was unimpressed. First of all, he asked Hughes, "Would you be offended if I called you a snake oil salesman?" "Not in the least, Senator," said Hughes. "I'm a politician and a lawyer." Who said politicians never tell the truth? The debate went on for a while, though the outcome was pre-cooked and 3/5 was converted to 5/9. To me, this has an all-or-nothing electoral college feel to it. To me, it seems to unfairly diminish or negate meaningful input from the 13 senators in the minority. Seems we might get better legislation if all are involved. That, however, is not Patrick's goal. Republican legislation is his goal. And let's note, as Hughes did Wednesday, that the overwhelming majority of bills that get to the Senate floor are approved with unanimous or near unanimous approval. Party line votes are rare. Only 18 of 1,816 approved by the 2019 Senate, Hughes said. But they're often on important controversial topics and will be again this session on topics such as abortion and guns and election laws. Whitmire, in what passed as semi-sarcasm based on a realistic projection of political reality to come, challenged Hughes on why 18. "If you're going to go to 18, you might as well go to 16. Whitmire, who's been in the Senate since shortly after Columbus allegedly discovered America, told Hughes, "And I will work to get the Democrats' support if you'll go to 16, because I think most of us are going to live and serve long enough to see the Democrats get to 16. A lot quicker than they get to 18, certainly 19 or 21. Hughes expressed no interest in any number other than the exact number his party now has in the Senate. So, Whitmire said in wrapping up, "Let me close by saying elections matter. It's not only a new day, it's a newer day." That last part was a reference to the belief that brighter days are coming for Texas Democrats, especially if Texas Republicans don't do a better job of attracting support among the fast-growing Hispanic populace. Texas is changing, but here's another legislative fact of life. The party in power can engineer legislative district elections to its advantage, and this is a redistricting year that will set those districts for the decade. The Repubs will have full control of that process. The Texas House approved its session rules on Thursday. GOP members voted down all Democratic proposed revisions on redistricting procedures. But unlike in the Senate, a hint of bipartisanship continued to prevail. The GOP-controlled House voted 127-11 against a proposal to require all major committees to be chaired by members from the majority party. FYI, Patrick has appointed a few Democratic chairs in past sessions. These nods to bipartisanship are healthy. I don't think there's anyone in this room who thinks Texas should function more like D.C., Representative Briscoe Kane, or Deer Park, said in opposing the effort to require House committee chairs from the majority party. There also was this on Thursday from Representative Tony Tenderholt, or Arlington, in a request to Speaker Dade Phelan. I would ask that you respectfully gavel the members to stop them from whistling and making silly noises. I know of no constitutional ban on silly noises, but Phelan issued the requested warning. A bit later, however, there was a discernible chicken clucking sound when Representative Justin Holland, or Rockwall, declined to take questions on his proposal to ban jeans from the House floor. Prior to a vote on his proposal, Holland chickened out and withdrew his proposed denim ban. Ken Herman, Austin American Statesman.
Odessa American Opinion Page, Wednesday, January 20th, 2021. Texas View. Hey, Ken Paxton, how much did your lawsuit cost Texans? The Point. Taxpayers have the right to know. The attempts of indicted Attorney General Ken Paxton to keep secret the cost of bringing a frivolous lawsuit in a disastrous attempt to overturn the 2020 presidential election is yet another public disservice. All we know at this point is state taxpayers are footing a $12,000 bill for printing charges. Paxton has refused to reveal much else about the litigation's expenses, asserting the information is exempt from disclosure. In other words, this public official doesn't think the public gets to know how much his office spent trying to overturn the presidential election. Why aren't taxpayers allowed to know how Paxton has squandered their money to erode democracy? We can't believe we have to even ask such a question, but we can't believe in 2018 voters chose Paxton over the supremely qualified Justin Nelson, valedictorian of Columbia Law School, and legal ninja. But we digress. Paxton's lawsuit was summarily denied by the U.S. Supreme Court, which found Texas lacked legal standing. The lawsuit, which 17 state Republican attorneys general had joined and 126 Republican members of Congress supported, had sought to throw out election results in four battleground states that had gone for President-elect Joe Biden. Paxton's lawsuit argued emergency pandemic-related election rule changes that were adopted by governors or other officials without the approval of state legislatures were unconstitutional. He also made unsubstantiated claims of voter fraud. Besides the printing charges, it is unclear what other costs might be associated with the case. The state was represented pro bono by special counsels Lawrence Joseph and Kurt Olson, Hearst Newspapers reports. Even so, taxpayers need to know the price tag on that donated legal work. Is Paxton reporting it as a political contribution? Texas taxpayers have the right to know. It is all about maintaining an open government accountability. Hearst Newspapers requested information on the litigation in early December, as did State Representative Chris Turner, who chairs the House Democratic Caucus, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, and a member of the public. The requests also asked for communications between the office and the Trump administration, the Trump legal team, and any other affiliates. Turner has blasted Paxton for using public funds in an attempt to overturn a free and fair election. Through an incomplete response to my public information request, we have so far learned that the taxpayers of Texas are on the hook for about $12,000 in printing costs for a bogus lawsuit that was dismissed out of hand by the U.S. Supreme Court. In reality, though, the price paid by Texas and America is far greater. Ken Paxton's lawsuit was an assault on our democracy, plain and simple, Turner said. We find it deeply troubling that the denial of the request for the lawsuit cost information is being handled by Paxton's own employees. The Attorney General's office is seeking a ruling from Paxton's Open Government Division on whether some of the records are required to be disclosed under the Texas Public Information Act. Where are the checks and balances on this? What this all means is there will likely be further litigation to keep the information secret, meaning the tab to taxpayers will only continue to increase. This isn't exactly surprising, unfortunately. Paxton spoke at the Save America rally before the insurrection and hasn't joined letters from other attorneys general condemning the insurrection. As the president might say, it is what it is.
American for Opinion Sunday, January 17, 2021. Other voices. Letters to the editor. Country is in chaos. In the last 5 years, there have been three attempted political coups to dispose Trump and effect overthrow our government. The first was the Mueller witch hunt. The second was the ridiculous impeachment attempt because of simple phone call to a Ukrainian official by Trump. And now, thirdly, the rigged, corrupt, and stolen election for Biden by Biden and his ilk. The courageous and Bible-believing founders of our country were rightfully suspicious and a little paranoid about big government, see King George of England. That is why they enacted the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. This right was not instituted for rabbit hunting. It was to dispose tyrannical government should it ever occur in our nation's future. Well, it looks like tyrannical government has arrived. What are Trump's voters going to do if the Biden coup occurs on January 20th? Roll over and play dead? This county is full of feckless, weak, docile, and passive cowards. Our founders were strong and God-fearing. They preferred death rather than lose their freedom. Well, this country's fate is now in the hands of God and the 75 million Trump supporters. George Pitts, Fort Stockton. Capitol takeover was a tragedy. It is with a personal, not a political, motivation that I respond to the recent article by Royal McGregor and Ruth Campbell and the story/interview by News West 9 regarding a Jenny Cudd from Midland who attended the recent protest in Washington, D.C. I do not know Ms. Cudd, nor have I ever heard of her until this week, but I would like to personally address her through this forum. Ms. Cudd, I do not know if you are a parent. I do know that every member of Congress and their staff have or have had parents. I am one such parent. Our son has had a passion for politics and government service since an early age. He has spent a number of years of his adult life preparing to work in public service. Through his own ingenuity, and certainly not the wealth and prestige of his parents, he has attended wonderful colleges and universities in order to secure the needed degrees to fulfill his dreams. Because of his intense labor, he has been able to work in government service in D.C. for a number of years and currently works for a member of Congress who embodies the goals and dreams that he has for our country. He loves his work and loves the people he works for and with. Like most staffers and members of Congress, because of his education and knowledge, he could have worked in much higher-paying positions, but he and the others prefer to serve our country through government service and not seek high-paying jobs. On Wednesday, January 6th, because of the pandemic, my son and many other staffers were thankfully teleworking and were not in the Capitol. However, obviously, there were staffers, members of Congress, and the Vice President of our United States who were present in the Capitol at the time of the security breach and violent entry, and the terror and fear they experienced will be with them for a lifetime. Through texting, my son and other staffers helped to navigate some of the staff who were trying to escape and hide from this onslaught. They had to rely on texting because to turn on a television or a computer could have resulted in some of them being discovered hiding in an office, a closet, a bathroom, or under desks. I don't know if you've ever experienced the fear of mob violence, the sound of gunshots in a hallway, the noise of an angry crowd who despises the work you are trying to accomplish, the panic of being alone and isolated during a crisis, and so on. I experienced a similar fear as a young adult, although on a much smaller and less violent scale, and it has lived with me ever since. Imagine, too, the panic one must feel when watching this scene unfold on live television and realizing that one's child or loved one may be a victim of this craziness. I can't even begin to visualize the fear that our members of Congress and their staff felt as they hid, fled, prayed, geared up in gas masks, and listened to the sounds of approaching violence and shots being fired. Unimaginable. Ms. Cudd, you keep stating that you and the other rioters with you were doing nothing wrong or illegal. A door was open and all of you just went in. This is difficult to fathom because security is generally at a priority in government offices, although we both agree that for some reason it failed miserably on this particular day. Can you honestly tell others that you believed one could just walk en masse into one of the most important government buildings in the world without being searched and while carrying your purse or backpack and with others carrying weapons, explosives, zip ties, technical gear, clubs, a sledgehammer, a spear, etc., with no repercussions? And especially with both chambers of Congress being in session and the Vice President present. Neither you nor I can enter our county courthouses or even local schools without being stopped and checked out. Thank goodness for that protection and for those who provide the protection, including the Capitol Police officer who lost his life. I thank the various people, Republican, Democrat, apolitical, and especially my church family, who contacted my husband and me during the time of the siege and afterwards, inquiring about the safety of our son and his co-workers. The genuine love and concern extended to us had nothing to do with politics, but instead with the compassion and fear for a fellow human being. I pray for the families and loved ones of those who lost their lives, and especially for the ones who will suffer lifelong trauma because of this awful carnage. It did not need to be that way. Thank you for this opportunity to express my concerns. Jeannie Holbrook, Odessa. Huge thanks to Medical Center Hospital. A few weeks ago, a small group of us met with MCH CEO Russell Tippin and Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons and MCH Board Member Don Hallmark. We had requested this meeting to express concern over the no-visitor policy that MCH and most other hospitals had adopted due to the COVID-19 crisis. We were warmly welcomed by Mr. Tippin and his team, and we openly discussed the challenges that were confronting the hospital and their patients. Just like us, the MCH staff were concerned about the detrimental effect that not allowing close family members and other caregivers access to the hospital was having on patients' physical, mental, and emotional well-being. We talked through various ideas and scenarios that would allow at least limited family access, and Mr. Tippin promised to get back with us within a few weeks with some ideas and plans to reopen the hospital to limited visitation. Yesterday, we were thrilled to learn that Mr. Tippin and his staff had indeed developed a plan that would allow one family member or caregiver per day to visit any non-COVID patient at the hospital. The MCH plan is simple and provides for the needs of the patients while at the same time protecting both hospital staff and other patients. We would like to applaud Mr. Tippin, the MCH staff, and the MCH board, especially Don Hallmark, for listening to our concerns and then developing a practical plan that meets the needs of our community. We are hopeful that other area hospitals will follow MCH's lead and reopen limited visitation as soon as possible. Tisha Crow, Jeff Russell, Odessa. listen to our healthcare officials. It seems rather hypocritical for Mayor Hovind to want to enforce an ordinance turning Odessa into a sanctuary city for the unborn, but yet favor rescinding the mask ordinance that was passed in November. Are not the lives of Odessa's citizens just as precious as those of the unborn? Masks are not what has caused businesses and schools to suffer. It is the virus itself, and a mask is a small sacrifice for each of us to make in order to prevent its spreading. The ordinance should only be rescinded after consultation and agreement with our local healthcare officials. After all, they are the ones that have made the biggest sacrifice and faced the biggest risk. They are the ones with the medical knowledge, not our city council. Suzanne Vaya. Guest Views. Give Thanks for Volunteer Board Members by Scott Murray. The challenge involved in providing an excellent educational experience for the many varied students in our district is a challenge that requires dedication and creativity in the best of times. The year 2020, however, was certainly not the best of times. The past year required an unusual combination of skills and talents from district leaders. Unexpected circumstances resulted in changes in laws and regulations, and those statewide changes required adaptability, quick problem-solving, teamwork, and leadership at the district level. Navigating through unfamiliar waters became a daily task, complicated by the differing opinions and desires of various constituents. These uncertain and sometimes treacherous circumstances created challenges for even the most seasoned among us. A steady hand on the rudder was absolutely required, and that's exactly what our district's trustees provided. Our Ector County ISD trustees are Delma Abalos, Position 2, Board President Tammy Hawkins, Position 6, Board Vice President Dr. Steve Brown, Position 5, Board Secretary Carol Gregg, Position 1, Dr. Donna Smith, Position 3, Chris Stanley, Position 4, Nelson Minyard, Position 7. They came through when we needed them most this year, charting a course that protected our most vulnerable while ensuring that academic progress could continue for all students. It was a daunting situation, but they navigated to success with unerring determination. Board service is a volunteer effort, accepted by only a few in the community. School board members are the largest group of elected officials in the state, numbering more than 7,000 statewide. Our ECISD trustees are business owners, educators, attorneys, and community leaders. They are people you see in the store, at the game, and in your neighborhood. They are shaping tomorrow. Take a moment to recognize our local trustees. Take a moment to honor the work they are doing to help our students sail into the future. Take a moment to say thank you for the work school board members are doing on behalf of our students and community. Join me in celebrating School Board Recognition Month throughout the month of January. Scott Murray is superintendent of ECISD. Texas Counties Working for a Strong Texas Future by Susan M. Redford, Texas Association of Counties. Every day, all 254 Texas counties deliver essential taxpayer services vital to the lives of all 29 million Texans. They build and maintain roads and bridges, protect the public's safety and health, guarantee judicial access, support fiscal responsibility, and promote effective governance. Over the past year, elected and appointed county leaders have been called upon to do more than simply carry out their routine responsibilities. Much more. From county judges and county commissioners to county health officials and all staff in county hospitals, these men and women have been front and center in all efforts against a deadly pandemic that has reached into every corner of our state. Working in tandem with federal and state officials, county leaders have had to make decisions on a daily, and in some cases hourly, basis that attempt to balance public health and safety with the need to deliver ongoing essential services in their communities. county health officials, who may once have been unknown even locally, have played a key role. The fight against COVID-19 continues in all 254 counties, and it will continue in the months ahead. In addition, the economic and fiscal repercussions from this pandemic will be felt for years to come. As the 87th Texas Legislature gets underway, state senators and representatives now also face many difficult issues because of this pandemic. Like our county leaders, legislators will debate and decide issues that are on top of decisions they would normally face during an ordinary legislative session. The Texas Association of Counties recognizes that strong state policy is best created when local and state officials work together. That's why all our county officials, county judges and commissioners, sheriffs, justices of the peace and constables, district and county attorneys, county and district clerks, county treasurers, county auditors, and tax assessor collectors stand ready to work with representatives and senators on issues that truly matter to all Texans. Susan M. Redford is executive director of the Texas Association of Counties and a former Ector County judge. Established in 1969, the Texas Association of Counties is the representative voice for all 254 Texas counties and county officials. Susan M. Redford.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Raynaud's and Cold Extremities. Dear Dr. Roach, 60 years ago, I was diagnosed with Raynaud's syndrome by my doctor. I started taking nifedipine during winter months, but not during the summer. After moving to Colorado, I took the medication year-round because the weather here was often cool in the mountains, even in summer. Then I was told to take 2 tablets a day rather than just one. I had been wearing support hose for 3 years due to leg swelling. One day I reviewed the medication paper that comes with the prescription and saw that nifedipine could be causing leg swelling. So I discontinued taking the prescription last summer, but I am really struggling with symptoms in my hands and feet. Is there any other medication available to improve my circulation? Even wearing socks and gloves all day is not helping this winter. M.W. Answer. Raynaud's phenomenon is an over-exuberant body response to cold, causing color changes in the extremities, such as fingers, toes, and earlobes. Severe cases can cause tissue damage, even leading to gangrene. In addition to avoiding cold places wherever possible and wearing protective clothing, medication treatment can be very effective. Nifedipine, a calcium channel blocker approved for use in the United States in 1981, is one effective treatment, but the swelling of the legs can sometimes make it intolerable. There are several other options, some of which may be surprising. Sildenafil, Viagra, has been a very effective option for some people. Nitroglycerin cream is reasonable for people who have limited exposure, but isn't a good choice for someone with symptoms year-round. Fluoxetine, Prozac, is helpful for some, as is the blood pressure medicine Losartan, Cozar. In general, I would not recommend stopping a medicine without talking to your doctor about an alternative plan.
Law's distraction may be more than forgetfulness. Dear Abby, for Friday, January 22nd, 2021. Dear Abby, I'm responding to the letter from Open and Shut Case in Virginia, October 20th, who complained that her son-in-law was disrespectful because he didn't close cupboard doors, cereal boxes, etc. My guess is that Kirk is displaying classic symptoms of adult attention deficit disorder, AADD. Multi-step tasks may be difficult for him to complete because he is easily distracted. My husband has this. It was not diagnosed until he was in his 50s, and I had nearly torn all my hair out. He still occasionally leaves cabinet doors and drawers open. I tease him that he can't remember to walk from one side of the room to another if he forgets to take his medication. I strongly recommend that Kirk be evaluated by a behavioral psychologist for AADD. Treatment may save the relationship between Kirk and his in-laws. wife of man with AADD. Dear wife, thank you for your letter. I received a deluge of responses about the letter from Open and Shut Case in Virginia, and the vast majority of the writers mentioned ADD, ADHD, and AADD. Many of them recommended patience on the part of the in-laws and volunteered that Kirk may be able to manage the disorder if he is diagnosed. Dear Abby, I am a 73-year-old retired woman who still maintains contact with a number of old and new friends from movies, dinner, museum visits, etc. Until the COVID virus, we did things often. Now, not so much. Someone in this group told me that on a couple of occasions, a few of them were not very nice when my name came up. Why doesn't she see her grandkids more often? She goes out more than most, yet doesn't want to eat in certain restaurants. My husband and I have a good marriage, but many of these ladies are widowed or divorced. How do you handle backstabbing at this age? Mystified in New York. Dear Mystified, try not to take it personally. Obviously, these gossips have less to occupy their minds than one would hope. You might also consider seeing these particular individuals even less often than you already do in the age of COVID. If you do, it may give them less ammunition concerning what you do or don't do with your time. Dear Abby, I began using a wheelchair 2 years ago. Since then, a dear friend of roughly 30 years has become fixated on my disability. While we once shared a deep, close BFF relationship, she now speaks to me in baby talk and only shows an interest in my physical limitations. I feel objectified, hurt, and disappointed. I have mentioned to her that I prefer to focus on other things in life, and she responds with platitudes like, "The body is just a shell," and "All that matters is the heart." But her actions tell me otherwise. I hate to end this friendship, but I am at the end of my rope. Any advice? Patronized in Arizona. Dear Patronized, if you haven't done it already, tell this person that you no longer wish to discuss your disability and you prefer she stop raising the subject and treating you differently. Period. If she continues to pursue the subject after that, make your visits less frequent if they happen at all.
Royal Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Aquarius and a moon in Taurus. Happy birthday for Friday, January 22, 2021. Charged, expressive, and exciting, you exude a magnetism that is hard to resist. Controlling your impulsiveness allows you to finish a long-term project that is extremely successful this year. If single, you experience strong feelings and attractions. This year, you find your mate. If attached, you are transformed by love. With patience and insight to match your depth of feeling, you can make this last forever. Cancer sticks to you. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. Bargains are found today. A friend's assistance is a key factor in generating a windfall. An exchange of ideas in a brainstorming session generates new perspectives. Your enthusiasm remains, bringing fun and excitement. Tonight, the good times roll on. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Your energy and enthusiasm are at a peak. A creative project captivates you. Your charisma level and charm rise throughout the day. Both business and personal situations are promising. You will find much to feel grateful for. Tonight, feeling the gratitude. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. Today you will feel more introspective. Listen to the small, still voice within you as you meditate by candlelight. A charm or picture featuring a snowflake design reminds you to cherish your individuality. You will embrace nonconformity. Tonight, a long, healing herbal soak. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. You will want to right wrongs and share knowledge. You inspire others. This favors any legal issues you have pending. It's also supportive of relationships. You will bask in the joyful accomplishments of someone who is near and dear. Tonight, Exhausted, you sink into bed. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 4 stars. The winter has a solemn quality. You feel dedicated to high-profile projects that are a challenge, but also have the potential to bring great rewards. Commit to yours and work on it today as you can. Tonight, celebrating a job well done. Bravo. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. Today accents your social circle and generates refreshing new goals. Helpful, supportive people offer encouragement. Meetings are exceptionally productive. Unexpected events are pending, perhaps an upcoming move or job change. Tonight, write down a list of your priorities and examine them. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 4 stars. Mysteries are resolved today. A lost item is found unexpectedly. You'll be attracted to faraway places. Overseas travel is especially appealing. However, organization is essential in order to keep up with many projects requiring your attention at work. Tonight, relax. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 5 stars. You will be able to extricate yourself from persons or situations that have been draining your energy and resources. Focus on what you would like to release. Reclaim your freedom in the peaceful darkness of winter's long night. Tonight, feeling calm and at peace. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 3 stars. Today generates an abundance of nervous energy. Pace exercise sessions today. Don't overdo it with really strenuous activity all at once. A beloved animal companion facilitates improved health and emotional well-being. Tonight, you feel your well-being improving. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 5 stars. Today generates a very sociable mood. Others will be attracted to you. Sincerity, a love of music, and stability are qualities that you would seek in a romantic partner. Today, the celestial patterns favor love. Tonight, you have the perfect backdrop for pursuing true love. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 3 stars. Consider redecorating or making household repairs. Place a bouquet on a table to bless your residence. Include snowdrops and other tiny white flowers, which represent hope. The needs of family members assume top importance. Tonight, early beddy-byes with a restful sleep. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 5 stars. Today generates solutions to complex situations. Helpful information arrives.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org. 1965.